to find ways to stay together. Until next week, as always.
And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk
about all things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Stages in the time of Corona and strange days they are. Now, theatres were one of the first hit, and I want to continue to bring voices of those in the theatre to you as we are hunkering down to see how people are coping in this new downtime. Now, hopefully, there will be a wellspring of new voices, new creativity that come from the state of the times, and hopefully not completely destroying our will. It's hard, but being creative people, we know that there are things going on now. And one of those voices we're going to be having a chat with today is Kerry Glasscock from the Old 505 Theatre and also the Sydney Fringe Festival Artistic Director and CEO. We're going to have a little chat with her about how she got to be where she is, as well as what it's like out there now for independent theatres and ways that we can look ahead to the future. So stick around. It'll be great to have a chat with her. But first, I'm going to play you something from A Chorus Line. Now, this was meant to be going on at the Playhouse Theatre. It would be on now at Darlinghurst. So I'm going to play you a song just to remember that, you know, these times too shall pass. And if the show can't go on, well, we can take it on into our lounge rooms. And so here you go. A little bit of A Chorus Line.
One singular sensation, every little step she takes. One thrilling combination, every move that she makes. One smile and suddenly nobody else will.
Oh my God, I am so inspired by watching that online. And why do I challenge you? I mean, there's so many things happening now, yoga, Pilates, dance. Well, I challenge you to learn a routine from A Chorus Line from a YouTube clip. Without further ado, let's have a chat with Kerry Glasscock. I had a chat with her earlier today via Skype.
Down the line, we have Kerry Glasscock, the Fringe Festival Director, CEO, and Head of Old 505 Theatre. Welcome to Stages, Kerry.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
For coming on in these strange, strange times. So before we get into, like, the situation out there, tell me a little bit about how you came to be where you are now. Like, what was your first theatre job? Or did you always want to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in the country in the central west of New South Wales, and from as long as I remember, I always wanted to be in the theatre as an actor or just a theatre maker doing anything. And so I kind of set that course really early. I left the country when I was 15 so I could do my last 2 years of high school at Newtown Performing Arts. I moved to the city and then I just started working professionally pretty much as soon as I left school.
Did you initially want to do acting? Is that why you went to the performing arts?
Yeah, and I still do act. I still make theatre and I do TV work when I have time. It's my kind of alter ego, you know, being a mum in adverts these days. Once you get to a certain age, you just cast for mum roles, you know. But I was always a performer first and foremost, and I fell into running venues really by default because my husband, who's a musician, and I met around the same time that we started 505, and really it was about finding a space for our community of artists, be they musicians or actors or theatre makers, to make work in. And that, so I always say it started very selfishly. It was really just for us to have a space to make work in, but the community and the broader community of audiences latched onto it really fast, and it, you know, took on a life of its own. And 15 years later, we, you know, manage venues.
So what was your first gig in the theatre?
Oh, gosh. I had lots of roles at school, of course. I remember one very busy year when I was in like three plays in one go, you know, like Girl Guide, school and something else, and that was a busy month. but my first my first roles in indie theatre, I suppose I was really lucky in that in my early 20s when I left, you know, from late teens to early 20s after I left high school, was right when the indie scene in Sydney was really burgeoning. So when Darlinghurst Theatre was really coming out and about, and TRS and, you know, it, at the old Fitz. And so I did lots of work at Darlinghurst Theatre with Michael Piggott, who's still a collaborator of mine, and Gareth Boylan and Christopher Johnson, and a whole series of work there. And then I just kept working, really. And my first professional main stage show was Capricornia at Belvoir, directed by Wesley Enoch.
Wow, what a time. So how would you say the independent theatre scene has changed over the years? Do you think it's...
Well, I think it's changed, and it's changed for the better, for sure. I mean, when I look back to when I was... you know, just starting out, there really wasn't that many indie spaces around. There was a great divide between kind of community and amateur theatre and then the main stage world. And I suppose there were lots of little places you could hire to put on work, like in, you know, Cat and Fiddle and the Balmain, and there were little pub spaces. But there certainly wasn't what we have now, where there's you know, primary purpose curated independent theatre spaces. Until TRS and Darlinghurst Theatre came onto the scene and kind of, you know, changed how we look at those spaces and how we do them, we didn't really have that. And so now when I look across, you know, whilst I'm a vocal advocate for, you know, needing more space and for the indie scene as a whole, and yes, we have our own problems around, you know, sustainability and viability, there's certainly a really strong scene here in Sydney where there's some great spaces like 505, Old Fitz, KXT, Flight Path now, where they're churning out great shows, and they're really high quality. In my role at Sydney Fringe, I'm fortunate enough to go to festivals all around the world, and I continually come back to Sydney just thinking the work we make here is exceptionally high quality. And I think often Sydneysiders think that everyone else does things better, or you have to go overseas to see great work. But, you know, I think there's something to be said for the competitiveness of Sydney. If you can get a show up and you make it, it's because it is incredibly good, or you have something really interesting to say. And that's the nature of a competitive city, I suppose. It drives high quality work.
Do you think, like you talked about, predominantly they're curated, so there is a process. Are there places that you can go and just, you know, not have to, I don't know, you can just experiment?
Not anymore, unfortunately.
Not anymore? That's what I was wondering.
It's, It's one of the big things that I spend a lot of my time year round outside of festival time at Sydney Fringe working on. So this is why Sydney Fringe Festival is so vitally important to the landscape of Sydney. It is now really, it is the only guaranteed time of year that you can just put on a show with no curatorial boundaries or guidelines. And so what we find is that all the indie spaces in town now have some degree of curatorial guidelines, and that's necessary because they're building a brand, but also it's a really tough business keeping a venue open in this city. It's expensive. We've got onerous regulation. It is very difficult. So you have to have really strict control over what you put on so that you can meet an audience's expectations, that you can meet your bottom line. You know, these things all affect programming and they limit the venue's ability to take risks. And that's fair, but what it means is that there's a huge portion of artists in our city, particularly emerging artists, recent graduates, early career artists, who simply have nowhere to put on work now because you can't just hire a space and put on a show. So Fringe really is the only time of year now where anyone who wants to put on a show can just register their work and we will find them a spot to perform. Whether that's, you know, an existing space that we work with to program work or whether it's a venue we build and create. And, of course, we have to build lots of them each year because there's just not enough existing spaces. Mm. So last year Sydney Fringe activated 39 temporary theatre spaces across the city.
Wow.
To accommodate our festival program. So this is something I am passionate about and that I work continually year round with either landowners to try and activate space, but more importantly with government to really try and identify what is stopping Sydney being able to have more venues and more spaces here. And it's not just a cost implication, it is also we have onerous regulation that makes it very difficult to open space here, and it makes it very difficult to build a viable venue that can be open and thrive. So there are lots of issues to unpick, but the biggest risk with that is that we don't have those flexible responsive spaces where anyone who's anyone can just put on work. And it's not just to the benefit of the early career artists, it limits established artists just being able to test out something or get something up on the floor. You know, a lot of artists aren't ready to put something into a full curated season, they just want to be able to test something. And without having those flexible open access spaces, we just can't do that in Sydney.
And I think the beauty of a festival like this, the Fringe Festival, is that you are getting stuff that's raw and just coming out and kind of almost tested to really high quality work. There's such a diverse opportunity to see everything, you know, around that people are making. Like there's a beauty in having the, you know, high, really polished work up against the new work, I think.
Yeah, it's a real snapshot. We like to think of Sydney Fringe as a snapshot of what is going on in Sydney now at this time.
In their mind.
It's immediate and, and it's responsive, yeah. And I think unlike other Fringe festivals, we're not about competing or in rebellion against the main stage arts festival. So it's why we don't sit in January. We're in September because we were formed from a very conscious decision to support and promote local Sydney-based independent artists and venues to a broader audience. Mm. And so for us, it's about actually saying, here's the work that's being made in Sydney right now. And that should include everyone from people who've never put on a show before to, you know, our highest profile artists doing something really crazy and amazing because it's in a festival context. Mm-hmm. And that's the joy of a festival like that.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about the festival, we've jumped in on from you. We'll get back to you again in a minute. But tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're planning, because I got something last week about, you know, this is something we can look forward to now. We can, you know, while this hard stuff is going on and we're locked inside and we're, you know, we can still be creative. So what's the plan for the Fringe?
Yes. Yeah, so like everyone else in, well, the world, in no matter what industry they're in, we're going through incredibly rigorous risk framework planning at the moment,
yeah,
to really look at exactly what we are going to and what we can do this year. And that includes identifying those trigger points of, you know, when we say, yes, we're definitely on, and when we say, uh-oh, we can't do it.
Yeah.
So as we work all through that, we'll have a better idea of what's going on. But what I can say is that, as always, Sydney Fringe is completely committed to being here for our community of artists, and we want to hold on as long as we possibly can to be available in September if we're allowed to, and if the government are letting people get together. Because I think more than ever, Sydney's going to need its Fringe Festival, and our artists are going to need the opportunity to be able to make box office income and revenue, and if nothing else, just express themselves creatively out in the public after being cooped up for however long we end up being cooped up for. So we're working really hard at the moment to still go ahead in some format when we're meant to go ahead. But, of course, we're also looking at alternative options if that is just impossible, because we could have all the best intentions, but if these distancing rules aren't lifted, then there's just no possible way that we can do it. So we're looking at all those options.
Fringe online.
Yeah. Or one of the things we floated today was like, or just a whole festival of one person shows, you know, because
yeah,
everyone can just rehearse on their own. Because the biggest thing that the biggest problem we're having at the moment, and especially this is something that I'm encountering at 505 at the moment, is it's rehearsal time is the problem. So, we've been reluctant at 505 to completely cancel the whole year, because it's, you know, the situation changes on a daily basis at the moment. And in another couple of weeks, we'll have an idea of how the government feel that the measures that are put in place at the moment are working, and whether, you know, we've got ahead of the curve, and they'll have a better idea of time frame. So we haven't wanted to cancel, you know, at the moment we're only closed till the end of May, and we reassess. But of course the June shows need to be able to rehearse, and the July shows need to be able to rehearse. So unless this social distancing, regulations are lifted, it is going to jeopardise those kind of June, July, August shows, even if you're allowed to open, because of the lead time that theatre requires, unless everyone can, you know, rehearse via Zoom. But it's not quite the same for theatre, is it? So we're thinking Fringe could very well be, you know, we're starting to think of creative ideas like that. Do you have a festival of solo work made during quarantine, you know, things like that, which could be fun.
Yeah, sure. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally fun. So tell me a little bit about Mulcahy, and it's not just, you know, the people that have had a show that's cancelled, it's the people running the lights. Or tell me about kind of the real consequences for these closures that have happened for independent theatre like Mulcahy.
Yeah, so I think independent venues are the highest risk category of our sector at the moment. There is a real danger if we do not receive serious government stimulus to our sector that can be directed to independent venues and companies that aren't funded, that we will wake up after this and not have venues left. Mm. And that's because, you know, what we're seeing is producers pull out of their seasons, which is fair, of course, but
yes,
many of them haven't invested money yet, or they're in a holding pattern where that money is going to be used next year, or, you know, those sorts of things. But for a venue, when we close our doors, we still have massive overheads, and we've got absolutely no cash flow. So we've had to put all of our staff on hold, of course, which is devastating. Mm. Hopefully some of that can be resolved with the JobKeeper stimulus that the government recently announced, but we're trying to work through that at the moment.
Yeah.
We have obviously huge overheads in Sydney if you run a venue on a commercial lease. So the ability to negotiate with your landlord as to whether you can have a rent-free period or a reduction is what's happening to everyone at the moment. Yeah. We're very fortunate at Old 505 that the trustees of the building that we operate in the old Newtown School of Arts at Five Eliza, are incredibly supportive and are partners with us in it, and they care about the cultural sector, so they're being as flexible as they possibly can, but that's a thing. And then, of course, there's all of your business overheads that you normally would write off over the whole year that you've paid up front that you're now just not going to be able to. So, for example, at a venue like 505, we produce all of our year's marketing collateral. At the end of last year when we launch our season. So we've already paid for all of that, and that's not costs we pass on to artists ever. They're just costs we absorb. And so that is normally recouped across, you know, you would normally divide that up over 12 months the year ahead, which comes from bar revenue. And, of course, that's not going to happen now for however long. Or there's insurances that are prepaid, and there's, you know, all these things. So it's really a traumatic time for venues. Many venues in town that have arts and entertainment have already weathered a five-year difficulty from lockouts. Nobody has working capital. Nobody has reserves like a funded company is mandated to. So the small business climate, particularly for arts and culture at the moment, is very, very dire. And it's going to be – it's going to take a huge community effort, and it is going to require government stimulus, and nothing has been announced yet, to ensure that we still have these venues and that they can come out of their closure period. Because for the individual artist or for the individual person who's lost employment, there are avenues for help. But – for many small businesses in the arts and cultural sector, we are not falling within the remit of eligibility in some of these stimulus packages, and we simply can't weather multiple months of closure. And you know, it's really tough. And so the best case scenario for many of us will be that we can access some type of funding to pay off business liabilities so that you can just go dormant. But that means that people like us who've worked really hard for 15 years and run really responsible, great businesses are now in debt, which we wouldn't have been in, you know. So nothing at the moment is pointing to happy news for any of us.
No!
You know, and it is, you know, we can just hope that there
talk
is a
more about
package.
It.
Yeah, and that a package comes through to from the government for arts and cultural sector, which, you know, a lot of great organisations are working really hard gathering real-time data and, you know, lobbying and advocating to government. But it is very difficult. Hopefully once the kind of wage issues being sorted, which hopefully it is almost there now with, you know, job seekers and job keepers, that the focus can then be put onto business and how we ensure that they're still around when this is lifted. It's pretty traumatic and a difficult thing to navigate. But of course, you know, we're all in it together and everyone's having a hard time. Yeah.
So are there places that people can go and, like, you know, I don't know, support some way or be across and informed or give their opinion, or, you know, where can artists or you know, people actually show their support? Are there places online?
Yeah, so there's a few things that are really important at the moment to help the sector. So there's a survey that's being collected called Lost My Gig that many people would have seen, which has been quantifying the dollar value with a focus on live music, but not only live music, since COVID. That's been a really important thing. The Live Music Office has a survey out at the moment for venues and the impact that it's had for them. That's really important. And Nighttime Industries Association as well have one for general nighttime businesses and the impact. So contributing to those important pieces of data where it's all in one place to quantify is really important. And then I think what we're going to see over the next little while is venues and businesses coming up with packages to get them by. Like, certainly we're going to do a membership drive. 505's really lucky in that we have a membership program anyway, where people pay $10 a month and they get discounts and things, and we've been running that for many years. So we're going to definitely do a drive for membership, I think, over the next little while that will, once I can have some time to actually put it all together, because I've been in knee deep in fringe risk planning. But once I can give 505 a little bit of attention, we'll do a big push for memberships, because at least that might be a way that some people who can afford to help can do so. And I think we will see more and more of those campaigns start to come on our channels. And I would just encourage anyone who is in the position to be able to help if they can. And likewise, it's like the call that went out earlier around, you know, not requesting a refund. If a show you've seen, you're going to see or have tickets to, has been cancelled, that's, we've seen a lot of people choose to gift their ticket price to the artists of the shows that we had to cancel, which was really great, because it means that at least a little bit of costs can be recouped by the producers who might have invested already or spent money. But I think as we've turned past that first 2 months now, what the biggest impact is now onto the venues, because certainly any shows that we cancel from now on, from June on, they are not financially committed to us anyway at that point in time, beyond maybe a deposit, you know. So it's certainly the impact is going to be felt only by the venues and not by the producers. So we need to find a way to support all of those venues in town, because, as we all know, those indie spaces are really important, and they're not supported anyway by government. You know, they've got no safety nets, but they're so important to our sector and to the health of our sector, and also to just our enjoyment of life in the city. Like, to be able to see most of the, you know, most of the best work is put on in those small spaces, you know. Like, we want to be able to still, we want to come out of this, whether it's in June or September or December or whatever, and not have lost our entire venue ecosystem.
Totally. So one last question before, because we're running out of time. With everything that's going now online and et cetera, what is your favourite thing that you've seen pop up, you know, as a something that kind of lifted your spirits for, you know, for the industry, for theatre? Have you seen anything online or... You know, there's a lot of live streaming stuff going on around the place.
There's so much.
International.
I love that Betty Grumble's doing a 10 a.m. exercise class. I think that's super fun. I think it's great. Grumble time, I think it's called, or something like that. That's super fun. Look, I think little fun things. To be honest, I've been limiting my social media time because I am so deep in just trying to do risk planning for two organisations that I am just trying to stay focused and get through the next couple of weeks. But what's been really lovely, I know we've done a wrap-up email recently, I think, with Fringe to all of our community around some great stuff that's coming out to lift everyone's spirits. So definitely check that out, and I think it's on our social channels too. But our team's definitely working on that and trying to, you know, collate it all to share with our community. And some of our other Fringe, you know, international Fringe festival community have been doing some really great things. There's about three festivals coming up in the next month that have gone completely online instead of cancelling their festival. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that works, and also being able to support it from here. Normally we don't get to go and see all those American festivals, so it'd be great to be able to buy a ticket and sit in our lounge room and watch a show. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I think the other great thing has just been seeing all of the big institutions make archives available and you know, so that there's a bit of joy through our channels.
Absolutely.
I think there's going to be there'll be big changes on that front over the next couple of months, for sure, as people work out how to adapt their content to online only and to monetize it as well.
Well, Kerry Glascock, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, pleasure, always.
Kerry Glascock, Artistic Director, CEO of the Sydney Fringe Festival and Old 505 and probably many other things, voted in 2011 one of the most influential and inspiring people in the Sydney Morning Herald, one of the... I love that. Thank you so much.
I hold on to that.
Yeah, keep that.
Thanks so much, Regina.
Thanks so much.
See you later.
I've been Regina Botros. You've been listening to Stages. I'll be back next week to bring you more of what's going on and people that are still out there in the world trying to fight for our industry. Stay safe and stay calm.